Several years ago, I guess it was for, I can't remember when, I think it was for Christmas, I wanted to give my boys something that would be a statement of what a real man was. Boy, there were so many messages out there of what a man was supposed to be and wasn't supposed to be. It was very confusing growing up, you know, with some of the cultural things that were pushing men down in some ugly ways. And I found a statement, and I printed off a copy of that, got them all a frame, and all the boys have this same thing. Josh has his in his office. Jody has his it's now the baby room. I don't know where it is anymore. Most of Corey's stuff is in a box, so somewhere he's got his. I don't know where he'll put it. But I'm just pleased that they have kept this in front of them all of those years. And it says simply, a real man is one who rejects passivity, accepts responsibility, leads courageously, and expects the greater reward to be God's reward. And that seemed to fit. It's kind of like a definition that would sort of cover the spectrum. How do you live? How do you act? What do you do? And what's the primary focus of your life? Open your Bible to 1 Samuel 17. I want us to kind of start maybe for a little while looking at people in Scripture that help us define what it means to belong to God. David, this is one of the most familiar stories of your Bible about David and Goliath. In fact, that concept, David and Goliath, is used as much in the business world as it is in the church. Anytime you've got a competition between the odds stacked against you, and you've got some sort of a giant problem or obstacle or something that you've got to figure out a way to defeat, and you see yourself as the little David boy, well, that scenario it came out of this story. It's pretty much prevalent there. Now, a few verses before, if you want to glance over to chapter 16, verse 18, this was sort of introduction of David into Saul's world. And that's a whole nother story, and we don't have time for that. But here's a definition. Then one of the young men said, "Behold, I have seen a son of Jesse the Bethlehemite," speaking, they're talking about David, "who is a skillful musician, a mighty man of valor, a warrior, one prudent in speech, and a handsome man, and the Lord is with him." Now that kind of is a definition, one of those succinct things that you could put on somebody's tombstone. Here's David. He was a skillful musician. And then that final statement, the Lord is with him. So we have that understanding. And then immediately following that, all of a sudden we're in this first major confrontation of David's life, fighting against a giant named Goliath. How does the fact that he is a man that the Lord is with get worked out in practice when now he's got to deal with a giant? And that's what this story is about for us. How do you transfer from that concept into everyday living? Yeah, it's nice to have somebody say great things about you. How does it flesh out? Well, that's what this story is about. Look at 1 Samuel 17, verse 1. I hope I don't bug y'all with coughing into my microphone, but I'll try not to. I'll put this in. "Now the Philistines gathered the armies for battle, and they were gathered at Succoth, which belongs to Judah, and they were camped between Succoth and Azekah in Ephes-Damim. Saul and the men of Israel were gathered and camped in the valley of Elah and drew up in battle array to encounter the Philistines. The Philistines stood on the mountain on one side, while Israel stood on the mountain on the other side with the valley between them. Then the champion came out from the armies of the Philistines named Goliath from Gath, whose height was 6 cubits and a span. Cubit is 18 inches. It was just kind of a standard measurement that they used. It was sort of like, not mine, but sometimes you could take your elbow to the tip of your fingers, and for the average man, that was 18 inches, a cubit. And it was just a way of measuring. A span, and my hand actually does go that, I don't think theirs did, is supposed to be like 6 to 9 inches, you know, where you do your span across there from where you ended up to where you go. So if you put all of those numbers together, you've got Goliath at about 9'6" to 9'9". He's not a small guy, but you put that in proportion to a Jewish boy named David, who probably at that stage in his life as a teenager was still growing. He maybe was only, you know, 5'6" at the most, maybe up to 5'8". The proportion was totally off. And you've got a huge against a small. And so it's just, again, the comparison is, David, you are a man that the Lord is with. How does that affect you when you run into something so big that you can't deal with under normal circumstances? Verse 5, Goliath had a bronze helmet on his head. He was clothed with scale armor, which weighed 5,000 shekels of bronze. I had to look that up because I don't deal with shekels very often. A shekel, 5,000 shekels, is 125 pounds. So he's carrying a sort of a scale armor like a mail. He's carrying that on himself, 125 additional pounds of stuff that he's carrying around. He also had bronze greaves on his legs and a bronze javelin slung between his shoulders. Shaft of a spear was like a weaver's beam, and the head of a spear weighed 600 shekels of iron. And the shield carrier also walked before him. That spear had a weight on the tip of it. The business end of the spear was about 15 pounds. Now, if you ever watch the shot put guys in the Olympics, they've got this huge chunk of steel that they're trying to launch out there. Typically, it's about 16 pounds. And so this staff and the spear end of that basically was like shot put. And here's a man who is strong enough to be able to use that in battle. You know, it's one thing to have the equipment. Can you use it? Well, you don't carry it around just to say, look how much I can carry and look at how big these things are. He had to be able to use those. So we're talking about a very strong and a very big man as he goes. Verse 8, he stood and shouted to the ranks of Israel and said to them, why do you come out to draw up in battle array? Am I not the Philistine and you servants of Saul? Choose a man for yourselves. Let him come down to me. If he's able to fight with me and kill me, then we will become your servants. But if I prevail against him, kill him, then you shall become our servants and serve us. And again, the Philistine said, I defy the ranks of Israel this day. Give me a man that we may fight together. And when Paul and all Israel heard these words of the Philistines, they were dismayed, greatly afraid. It would seem that when you've got one guy that big, you can put all your hopes in him. You know, you say, okay, nobody can defeat Goliath, so we'll put him out there, and whoever they send out, it's going to be an easy fight. He'll get rid of him in no time. And so that was sort of the contest, and they were trying to keep taunting them with those words. And I don't know if you've ever been taunted where you hear these messages either coming from a person or just ringing in your head that is taunting you against what you think you ought to be able to do, or taunting you to make you become so afraid that you can't function. I found a great acronym thing for fear. Fear, forgetting everything and run. That's a typical approach with fear. Fear makes us want to leave, get away, back off, stay out of it. Fear drives us not to go into but away from. Here's the other side of that. You turn that word around and it becomes excuse me, it becomes face everything and rise. Face everything and rise. And here you've got the taunts that are basically saying, you can't defeat me. I'm too big. My equipment's too large. There is no way that you can win this battle. And it is a challenge, first of all, to our belief, but also it begins to settle into our hearts. See, Jesus had said, let not your heart be troubled. What troubles our hearts? It's that fear that we can't cope with this problem. We can't answer this question. We can't solve this dilemma. That begins to settle into our hearts, and our whole life begins to reflect what we can't do. And again, it's because of the taunts. It's because of the message that's going on. Everywhere we turn, we're reminded of our troubles. I tell you what, I have had more fatal diseases when I've taken my symptoms to the internet and tried to find out what my problem is. I have had more critical. I was gone. I knew it was all over. If you go to the internet with your symptoms, they're going to give you worst case scenario, and you realize that. So I've done that, and it's like, okay, I've got this problem here. What does this mean? Go on the internet. Oh, you have this disease. So you know, we hear these taunts, we hear these messages, and we let them play out, and they take us to the worst case scenario. This is the result. This is what's going to happen as we go through this. But it's not just that we kind of research on our own. You can have gone through a loss. Maybe you've lost a spouse, and everywhere you go, you see couples, and that touches your heart. It troubles your heart inside. Or you may want a child, or a grandchild, and you look at all these little happy babies and the families that have them and the grandparents that get to play with them, and it goes into your heart. It troubles your heart when you see those things. You see, it's not just a matter of this outside appearance of things. These messages come deep on the inside. I remember years ago when I was kind of dealing with some issues that we all go through, trying to get some balance in my life. One of the things that I was told is, you got a record player playing in your brain, and it's just going on and on with all these messages that are trying to defeat you. You're not making it play those. It's just kind of running on its own, and it's replaying those messages that someone has said back in your life, and that message still haunts you today. I don't know if you remember when the Beatles came out, but our neighborhood, for some reason, we thought that was the greatest thing that ever happened to the world. And so we would buy the records, and then we would sit around in the living room and sing along with those records. That was just kind of what we did. We were the Beatles. We'd sing, and we had the greatest time doing that. And this punk kid in the neighborhood, while we were singing, he turned to me and said, "You don't sing very good." Do you know how many times I've heard that message play in my brain since he said that when we were probably 11 or 12 years old? I've heard that message over and over and over. And I have walked up to think that, okay, I've got to present a song, and I hear that voice saying, "You don't sing very good." And it has made me believe what he said is true. I've heard things that parents have told kids. And it goes into that recorder somewhere, and it plays in their head sometime, and somewhere they're trying to do something, and they hear their mother say, "You can't do it that way." Or they'll hear the dad say, "You're never gonna manage making it at all." And those tapes play over and over and over, and what they are taunts. They're just a taunting of the world to try to defeat us from being able to be all that God had created us to be. I know this is stupid, but you watch even TV shows or see a movie, and somehow you identify with a character, and you see what's going on there, and all of a sudden that's going on in your life as well. You got the same messages coming by. Look on at verse 12. Now David was the son of the Ephrathite in Bethlehem in Judah, whose name was Jesse. And Jesse had 8 sons, and Jesse was old in the days of Saul, advanced in years among men, which basically means he was older than most of the guys around. He was living a long life. Most of the guys of his generation had already passed away. So he was one of the survivors of his group. The 3 older sons of Jesse had gone after Saul to the battle. And the names of his 3 sons who went to the battle were Eliab, the firstborn. The second was Abinadab. The third was Shema. David was the youngest. Now the 3 oldest followed Saul, but David went back and forth from Saul to tend his father's flock at Bethlehem. And the Philistine came forward morning and evening for 40 days and took his stand, distressing them constantly. Again, those messages will just keep playing, and they'll keep cycling through. You know what a loop is? We'll see these things on Facebook. Somebody will put a picture of something, and you're watching that, and after about 3 minutes, you realize, hey, that thing's only 15 seconds, and it's rerunning itself all this time. And you're just seeing it over and over and over, and you realize, oh, it's on a loop. That's all it is. Well, this was like a loop. He was constantly coming out every day and making the same claim. Guys, fight me. This thing will all be over. Then Jesse said to David, his son, now take to your brothers an ephah of this roasted grain and 10 loaves. Run to the camp to your brothers. Bring also these 10 cuts of cheese to the commander of their 1,000. Look into the welfare of your brothers and bring back news of them. For Saul and they and all the men of Israel were in the valley of Elah fighting the Philistines. So David rose early in the morning and left the flock with a keeper, took the supplies, went as Jesse had commanded him, and came to the circle of the camp while the army was going out in battle array, shouting the war cry. And Israel and the Philistines drew up in battle array, army against army. Then David left his baggage in the care of the baggage keeper and ran to the battle line and entered in order to greet his brothers. And as he was talking with them, behold, the champion, the Philistine from Gath named Goliath, was coming up from the army of the Philistines, and he spoke these same words, and David heard them. When all the men of Israel saw the man, they fled from him and were greatly afraid. Again, one of the things that produces fear is that idea that whatever's going on is going to keep going on because I can't stop it. You know, this has only one outcome, and it's not good, and so I can't stop it. And that fear of this problem being unsolvable creates enormous fear. I don't know if you've ever gotten a rock in your shoe. In the old days, we as kids seemed like we used to always get a rock in our shoe. And you can't run with a rock in your shoe. You can't walk with a rock in your shoe. You just got to stop, get the rock out, and then you go on. Well, there is a syndrome of this idea of trying to live your life with a rock in your shoe, and the only thing you forget is how to get the rock out, and you end up continually walking or running or going with that rock in your shoe, and all it would take is a moment to be able to say, no, this is not the answer. Take the rock out, put the shoe back on. But we get caught in this syndrome where the fear is so strong, we forget the simple solution of what it means to take the rock out. So here are these guys who every day are being taunted. Every day they're hearing the same message. Every day their fear is intensifying because they know what the outcome is going to be. Nobody can beat that giant. They know what the outcome is going to be, and they just are living in dread of that day. And so the rock is in the shoe, and every day they pound their foot on that rock when Goliath comes out and taunts them. Hopelessness is a world characteristic. It's a worldly characteristic. Hopelessness is not a characteristic of the people of God. These men were not focusing on what God could accomplish in their life, as David's going to come up and show us in a minute. They were simply looking at the problem and their resources to defeat it. That's a worldly approach. And the worldly approach produces hopelessness because it finds itself incapable of dealing with these things altogether. Verse 25, the men of Israel said, "Have you seen this man who is coming up? Surely he's coming up to defy Israel. And it will be that the man will enrich the man who kills him. The king will enrich the man who kills him with great riches and will give him his daughter and make his father's house free in Israel." And David spoke to the men who were standing by him, saying, "What will be done for the man who kills this Philistine and takes away the reproach from Israel? Who is this uncircumcised Philistine that he should taunt the armies of the living God?" The people answered him in accord with his word, saying, "Thus it will be done to the man that kills him." You know, the missing ingredient for these other men is perspective. You know, perspective is probably the greatest gift God gives us to be able to deal with things that are so superior in outlook to us than our resources to take care of it. Perspective. They were looking at this as a problem they had to solve with their strength, and they couldn't do it. David came in with a different perspective. He came in with, this is something that my God can handle. And so he came in with a perspective that magnified God and diminished the problem. These men had a perspective from their standpoint that it minimized God by taking him out of the picture and magnified the problem. And again, when David comes in, the whole scope of this thing begins to change. We may be without control, but God isn't. And that's where we have to learn to live as believers. Right in that zone that says, yeah, I know what I'm facing is critical. I know what I'm facing is substantial. I know what I'm facing looms large in my horizon, but I also have to keep the balance that it's not bigger than God is. God can step into the midst of this, and he can deal with this however he chooses. Daniel said this, "The people who know their God will be strong and will do great exploits." It's not that they will just by their own strength be able to accomplish these things, but the tie-in was the people that know God, in other words, have the perspective that God is bigger than what's going on, they can step into it and they can deal with it as it needs to be. Verse 28. Now Eliab, the oldest brother, heard when he spoke to the men, and Eliab's anger burned against David. Now this is kind of typical family squabbling. It's really funny. Against David, and said, "Why have you come down, and with whom have you left those few sheep in the wilderness? I know your insolence and the wickedness of your heart. You've just come down in order to see the battle." And David said, "What have I done? What have I done? I just was asking a question." I don't know if you've ever been in a family like that, where the brother is going to overpower you, and you say, "Hey, I was just asking a simple question." And that's the family connection of what was going on here. But notice the response. Then he turned away from him to another and said the same thing. The people answered him as before. When the words which David spoken were heard, they told him to Saul, and Saul sent for him. Now you realize that the taunting, the challenge was for a man-on-man battle. One man against one man, and whoever won that won the war. Putting all your eggs in one basket, I guess. But that was what the challenge was. And so when you come back to that and all of a sudden they hear, wait, we've got a guy who says he'll take on Goliath. Then they said, okay, get him to Saul. Let Saul deal with this and see what's going on. And David said to Saul, "Let no man's heart fail on account of him. Your servant will go and fight with Philistine." What that says is this, the man that can step into the moment when the odds are totally on the other side of the enemy, when the numbers just don't add up, what they've got against what I've got, how large the problem is against how small I am, when the odds just don't line up, when somebody will come in there and stand up and say, "Wait a minute, I got this." It all of a sudden changes the whole context of what's going on. And that's what David basically was saying. Look, I will take care of this issue. Now, what we're going to find out, though, in just a moment, he was not in some cocky way coming in and bragging on his ability to do something as outlandish as kill a giant. But he knew something that the other guys didn't know. He had insight. Not only did he have perspective, but he had insight. And you'll see this in just a moment. You know, any time that we take that stand to say, wait, I'm going to trust God with this problem. I'm going to trust God in this situation. You realize, as David had already been with his brother, you're going to get ridiculed because there's a lot of people that don't understand how God works. And they don't have that insight and what it means to trust him, what it means to rely on him. They tell you, you're not taking this problem seriously if you say you're just going to pray about it. Or you're in denial, you know, that this is really a problem if you're going to, you know, be okay with it. It's like that famous statement, if you can be calm in a moment like this, then obviously you don't know the severity of the problem. You know, if you can be calm, if you can be at peace, if you can be trusting, then you really don't know how big this problem is. You basically have allowed yourself to be duped in the sense of that. But verse 32, David said to Saul, "Let no man's heart fail on account of him, the Philistine. I'll go in and fight with him." Then Saul said to David, "You're not able to go against the Philistine to fight with him. You're but a youth." Well, he's been a warrior from his youth. David would have been a teenager. That would have been the expression of a youth at that day. But David said to Saul, and this "but" changes the whole conversation. Yeah, David was not an acceptable warrior to go against a giant. Look at him. Everything about him said, don't put this boy out there against that man. You know, you don't take a knife to a gunfight. You know, David is not the one. If we're going to put all of our hopes on one guy, let's get a big guy and send him out there and equip him and hope he gets the first blow in and can somehow dismantle this giant. You don't send this kid in to take care of that. But David said to Saul, "You know, your servant, me, was tending his father's sheep when a lion and bear came and took a lamb from the flock. I went out after him and attacked him and rescued it from his mouth. When he rose up against me, I seized him by his beard and struck him and killed him. Your servant has killed both the lion and the bear, and this uncircumcised Philistine will be like one of them, since he has taunted the armies of the living God." Now see, that's that difference in cockiness confidence. Cockiness is an opinion that basically says that I can do these things by my own ability. Confidence is knowing where the strength actually comes from and knowing what God can do through my life. It's a difference in that perspective. You remember where this thing started? The Lord is with him was that first introduction to David. That's what makes David different than anybody else in that whole story. Not because David had an ability to kill giants, but because David had the Lord with him. So David wasn't looking at this problem and saying, "Hey, I got the answer. Just get out of the way and let me take care of it." David was coming into this with some background that said, you know, I've had similar situations, and this is how I trusted God back there. I'm just going to apply that trust to this moment and watch God do the same thing. You see, that's how faith grows. We trust him for these little issues, not that a bear and a lion are little issues, but we trust him in these other issues of our life so that when we get to this gargantuan problem, we're not coming into it without anything, any resources in the bag. We're able to come into that big problem saying, you know, oh, this is a big problem, but God's been faithful all along in my life in all these other areas. Why would he not be faithful in this? And so with confidence, we can face an insurmountable problem knowing how faithful God has been in the past. That's why hearing your stories thrills me. When I get to visit with you on various times and you tell me what you've been through, tell me what you've overcome, tell me what you've defeated, tell me what the battle's been like, and being able to say, you know, I didn't think I was going to get through that, but look, this is what God did. And all you're doing is just encouraging me to trust God in my own situation, which is really what Paul had said in 2 Corinthians, first part of that. He said, when God comforts us, he does it so that we can take the comfort that we have from the moments that we've experienced that and share it with others. And we can help them trust God because we have been there as an example of what God's capable of doing. Well, that's where David is in this. That's why this story of the bear and the lion are so important in the flow of this, is because he's not coming in and say, hey, look at me. I've killed lions, I've killed bears, I can kill a giant. He said, you know, the same God that allowed me to do those things is the God that's in charge of this problem. And this guy is defying us, so let's get into it. Look at verse 37. And David said, the Lord who delivered me from the paw of the lion and from the paw of the bear, he will deliver me from the hand of the Philistine. And Saul said to David, go and may the Lord be with you. That's where Star Wars got that, by the way. May the force be with you. May the Lord be with you. Now, why is that an important statement? Because that's what defined David in the very introduction. He has all these other characteristics and the Lord is with him. And so what Saul is basically saying is, may the Lord who has been with you be with you now. And you know what's so good about that concept is that's exactly what Jesus promised. He said, I am with you always, even to the end of the earth. As I have been with you back there, I am with you right here. I'm not going to get you through all of these other little incidents of your life and then come to this big thing and leave you to see if you can get through it on your own. Confidence is that God is with us in all of these matters. Then Saul clothed David with his garments, put on a bronze helmet on his head, clothed him with armor. David girded on the sword and all of these stuff. I'm just going to kind of skip down. He had to take them off because he said, I can't wear this stuff. This isn't how God works in my life. You cannot borrow someone else's faith. You cannot borrow someone else's technique of how they do things. The only thing you can borrow from them is confidence in what God is capable of doing in our lives. You hear their story, you see what they've done, and you say, yeah, God, as God was to them, God will be so to me. You can't borrow from someone else. You simply have to trust in those things. So verse 40, he took his stick in his hand, chose for himself five smooth stones in the brook, and put them in the shepherd's bag, which he had even in his pouch, and the sling in his hand, and he approached the Philistine. Then the Philistine came to approach David with him, Shobar in the front. David looked, and Philistine looked, and he was disdained because here's this young kid. Philistine said, am I a dog that you come with me like this? And watch this. Verse 44, the Philistine also said to David, come to me, and I will give your flesh to the birds of the sky and the beasts of the field. Then David said to the Philistine, you come to me with a sword, a spear, and a javelin, but I come to you in the name of the Lord of hosts, the God of the armies of Israel, whom you have taunted. You see, folks, never think that we are without resources. Never think that just because I may not have what somebody else has, I don't have enough. One of the promises that God has always made is he will give us abundantly what we need for every situation. He doesn't just give us enough. You know, okay, you got this much, so be careful. Don't use it all in one moment. You know, it's be sparse with it. He gives us more than enough to handle everything that we face. And so here's David coming out who is able to say confidently, yeah, you come with me with your weapons. I got God on my side. And God on my side is far superior to you and all you have on your side. This day the Lord will deliver you into my hands, and I will strike you down, remove your head from you, and I will give the dead bodies of the armies of the Philistines. This day the birds of the sky and the wild beasts of the earth, that all the earth may know that there is a God in Israel. And all this assembly may know that the Lord does not deliver by sword or by spear. The battle is the Lord's, and he will give you into my hands. The focus, I think, of where David is on this is that what you're going to see is going to shout God real loud. You're going to see something that, in all practical ways that you might try to calculate this, it's not going to go good for David. There's nothing that you can predict on this that's going to be able to say David's going to walk out of this thing alive after it's all over and Goliath's going to be dead. You cannot predict that. So what David is saying is, I tell you what's going to happen is going to be so contrary to what would be expected to happen, the people are only going to be able to say, God did it. This is God. And I don't know, you've seen that so many times in your life, maybe in big matters related to the world situation, or maybe even our nation, or whatever's been going on, and you've been able to say, you know, boy, that was God that did that. There wasn't any way that you can say something happened according to these, you know, calculations. No, God just stepped in and did that, and this was God. And so David's basically saying this will end up with a shout that says God when this is all over. Verse 48, then it happened when the Philistine rose and came and drew near to meet David that David ran quickly toward the battle line to meet the Philistine. Now, isn't that interesting? When you're confident, you run toward your problem. When you're afraid, you run from it. David wasn't afraid. There's nothing in here that indicates David was concerned that this wasn't going to go as he thought it was. He was absolutely confident. So he ran to that. Then it happened when the Philistine rose and came and drew near to meet David that David ran quickly toward the battle lines to meet the Philistine. David put his hand in his bag, took from it a stone and slung it, stuck the Philistine in his forehead. Stone sank deep into his forehead so that he fell on his face to the ground. Thus David prevailed over the Philistine with a sling and a stone and struck the Philistine and killed him. And there was no sword in David's head. So David ran, stood over the Philistine, took his sword, drew it out of the sheath and cut off his head with it and killed him. Then the Philistine saw that their champion was dead and they fled. You know what that last thing basically says is follow it through to the end. Whenever we're dealing with problems, it is not just to seek relief and say, wow, that was good, and walk away. Remember the lepers that came to Jesus? They all, 10 guys, had leprosy, just destroying their bodies. And they came up and Jesus healed them all and they went away. And one of them came back and said, oh, Lord, thank you for that. You know, one described him as a thankful leper who came back. What's the follow-up? Remembering who made this happen. It's so easy to get heady for David to say, I took out Goliath. You know, I did it. Did you see me do it? I hit him with a rock in the head. I did it. I took him out. I told you I was going to, and that's what I did. You know, it's easy to get the big head and thinking that somehow or another, even after praying, we did something. No, this was to prove God did it. And when God did it, he gets the credit. We're completing the action, so it demonstrates that God has completed his purpose. It's kind of a little, you know, side story, I guess, on this. What killed Goliath? Well, the first thing said the rock killed him, and he fell down. But then David went ahead and cut his head off. Why? I think he wanted everybody else to see this guy's gone. Here's his head. I've got his head. It's away from his body. He's dead. And that just enraged all the rest of the guys of the nation of Israel. And they took out after the Philistines and tried to wipe all of them out. But it was like accomplishing the whole thing, not just going to the point of getting relief, but going all the way to the point of doing the dance of joy to be able to say to anybody that watches, hey, God did this. Don't give me credit. Don't think that, you know, it was just the doctor who took care of this thing. Look, God took care of me. God gets the credit for that. And that's why this story is so important. It shows how when God is with you, you face whatever you face. And when you face whatever you face, you know with confidence you can be an overcomer because you're connected with the God who can do all things. All right? It's a good way to get ready for a new year. I don't know what you're going to face. Chances are some of us are going to have a rough year. I don't know why, but it's just kind of easy to assume that. But I want you to know, whatever we face, God's bigger, and God will get us through those things. So let's trust Him, all right? Father, thank You for this morning. Thank You for the opportunity to make You big, just to be able to demonstrate before everybody that listens that You can take out any obstacle that gets in the way of our life. Father, I thank You that You were able to dispatch Goliath through David's faith. And Father, You did it in such a way that could only be something that You could do. Wasn't a teenage boy accomplishing anything. It was You. Father, it wasn't David overcoming Goliath. It was You in David facing down giants. Father, thank You. Thank You that we can believe on the same level that He did. And we can face whatever giants are in our lives. And Father, we can come through successfully and with confidence with whatever we face tomorrow because of how faithful You've been in the past. Lord, help us to remember that and never let it slip away. You're the same God yesterday, today, and forever. And that's what we've got to hang on to. Lord, bless now this communion time as we go into it. Bless our focus. Bless our open hearts before You. In Jesus' name, amen.